Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to be the top story around the world, and as state governors began at least considering some sort of reopening strategy, most Americans have a lot of questions. The foremost for me is, how did we get here, and what could the successful government mandate that the healthy quarantine mean? What could that mean if and when a future pandemic rears its head? Today we're going to take a look at HIPAA and the way the government uses your data, the storage and use of baby DNA, and the contact tracing being encouraged to battle COVID-19. My guest today is Twyla Brace, president and co-founder of Citizens Council for Health Freedom, or CCHF, a national patient-centered nonprofit established 25 years ago in Minnesota to support the healthcare choices, individualized patient care, and medical and genetic privacy. She's the author of the four-time award-winning book, Big Brother in the Exam Room, The Dangerous Truth About Electronic Health Records, which was published in July 2018. Thanks, Twyla, for being with us.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
So you're an RN and a PHN, which I guess is public health nurse?
Correct.
I'm guessing. Okay. So you have the credentials, but you've been in this battle for 25 years. Why did you feel 25 years ago the need to establish CCHF?
It all began with what the Clintons were planning to do with the healthcare system. Not only did they want to take it over and nationalize it, but it was also the way that they wanted to do it, which was they wanted to have an HMO for all system. So I saw, and those who helped to start the organization saw, that the Clinton administration was moving to put all of us into managed care plans that would constrain our access to care, would ration it, and would take our decisions away, and this would be the kind of national healthcare system that would be created. Mm-hmm. And so that was the very beginning, and as you probably know, the Clinton plan went away, but then I realized in Minnesota that we had a state version of the Clinton plan.
Oh.
And so then the organization began, and it didn't take very long to figure out that a lot of what the Clintons did came from Minnesota, and there was a strong connection there. And we just expanded into not only dealing with policy at the Minnesota level, which we still do, but also at the national level, trying to stop socialized medicine and make sure that patients and doctors can work together at an affordable price.
Right, right.
With care that works for the patient.
Right. And, I mean, socialized medicine, that's a big Bernie Sanders thing, you know, Medicare for All and all that kind of stuff. So there's still the big fight to implement social medicine here in the U.S. So it's really, even after 25 years, that fight continues. So, you know, we're now quarantining the healthy. How has the U.S. response to this pandemic been different from those in the past, such as, N1H1?
Right. So there's never been a shutdown of the economy and certainly not a shutdown of the whole world. H1N1 had, you know, there were cautionary things thrown out there and, you know, wash your hands, and there were some concerns, but, you know, a lot of people, I'll bet, don't even remember H1N1. They may not remember swine flu, you know, they may not remember, but they probably remember and they know about HIV. That's also considered a pandemic, but everything has not been shut down for that. That's actually a very large one caused by a virus.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are a lot of them throughout the history of this country and this world, but never has everything been shut down, essentially immobilizing a nation and shutting down its economy, making it far more difficult for the nation even to successfully endure the pandemic, both at a monetary or fiscal part, as well as just, the people themselves.
Right. So it's crazy. And the media is pushing, I mean, the fear-mongering, you know, you have to wear a mask to go outside or you're all going to die, and et cetera, et cetera. So we're getting, I mean, the whole media thing is just fear, fear, fear. You have to be afraid to go into a store. You have to be afraid to leave your home. And it just, the sort of swine flu, the bird flu, whatever kind of flu, N1H1. I had pretty much forgot about them until this all happened and, you know, these were brought up again. Yeah, that was pretty much just a blip in the map. We were talking about, you know, the pandemic history or whatever. So,
well,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I think I'm doing these COVID-19 update videos on Facebook.
Okay.
And Facebook Live, I'm doing one shortly after our interview here. But I had a picture that somebody had created of all the pandemics back to, you know, whenever they started cataloging them. And, you know, it's really fascinating how small COVID-19 is compared to the others. They had balls, different size balls across the history, mm-hmm. so you could kind of tell how big it was. And COVID-19 is going to be bigger than some of them, like SARS and MERS,
mm-hmm.
those pandemics, but it's definitely not going to be the biggest or even close to the biggest ones that we have had in our history.
Wow. Yeah, my fear is that the government, at least state governments, found out how easy it is to get people to go to their homes and stay there just by planting that fear of this is a pandemic, we don't know what it is, and which I can understand doing it the first 2 weeks because we did not know. We were not getting truthful information out of China. But after 2 weeks, people should have reassessed, I believe. You know, some governors are and some governors aren't. We won't mention which political parties are doing what. But anyway, our Democratic governor, Tom Wolf, has said he's going to implement the Civilian Coronavirus Corps, which is for contact tracing. Has this type contact tracing ever been done in past pandemics? Or is it a new concept?
It's not a new concept, but the way that they're planning to do it and the breadth of it is new.
Mm-hmm.
So they have done contact tracing for HIV, and ACLU is just out with a report saying that that was not successful. Lots of people won't give their contacts. And so that's probably the very same thing that's going to happen here, particularly as people start to realize that if they give somebody's name, given some of the controls and powers of the state and given how some of the states have acted, you know,
mm-hmm.
sending out the police to handcuff people on who are alone on the beach, right,
mm-hmm.
or a mother in the park, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's probably going to be a lot of people who are going to refuse to give any names, any contacts to the people who come and knock on the door or call you on the phone or come to your
mm-hmm.
hospital bed.
Right.
Because there will be fear as to what will happen to their friends or their family if they give out that information.
Right, exactly. You know, they're going to be using cell phones, the technology that was not there in previous, at least not to the extent that there was there in previous pandemics. So
they're going to try.
Well,
they're going to try to use cell phones. Google and Apple have come out with a API. It's a certain program that all the health departments in the world, they say they have it, they've given it out around the world,
mm-hmm.
and those health departments can then use it in the apps that the health departments use.
Okay.
They would be voluntary apps, and so you would not have to add them to your phone. And of course, I think, you know, there's great concern as to what it would mean if you ever did put one on the phone, because despite all the, you know, the statements about voluntary and,
right, exactly.
you know, de-identified and all that kind of business,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure anybody will believe it.
No, I don't think so anyway. I don't believe they would. Could you tell us what HIPAA is?
Yes. People know HIPAA as the form that they sign at the doctor's office. That's often, you say that, that's what they'll think about, the privacy form at the doctor's office.
Right.
But here's the reality. HIPAA stands for the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1996. And out of that act came a requirement that there be a privacy rule written either by Congress or by the government. And because Congress didn't do it, the government did. And
mm-hmm.
that's what people now know as HIPAA, this so-called federal privacy rule. However, HIPAA is not a privacy rule. It is considered a permissive data sharing rule. And so, you know, when they say sign that form, that you're actually signing a form that says that you understand that you have no privacy. You're saying I have read or I have received the notice of privacy practices from the clinic or the hospital, and that's what you're signing. But if you actually read the notice of privacy practices, you will notice that it is a notice of disclosure practices.
So it's the exact opposite of what people are led to believe.
It's exactly the opposite. As a matter of fact, the federal government in 2010 published a list of all the entities that could have access to your information if those who hold it, like your doctor, your clinic, your health plan, your hospital, the laboratory, or whomever, if they choose to share it. So they don't have to share it, but they are permitted to. So that's why it's considered a permissive data sharing rule, and they can share it without your consent. And there's 2.2 million entities. That's entities, not people, entities. They include 1.5 million business associates, like, you know, big corporations, even like Amazon, Google, and then
they can have access to your data
if those who have it choose to share it. So right. Like Ascension Health System in 21 states has given all the medical records to Google. 50 million, the medical records of 50 million people have been given to Google. Google has a business associate agreement with Ascension Health System. So Google has the names, the addresses, the diagnoses, everything as a part of this business agreement.
So
no consent is required.
So when you get some medical-related mailing in your mailbox, something in your mailbox medical-related, then they more than likely have gained access to your data through this, through the HIPAA, which you signed, which you thought you were signing to protect your privacy.
Well, I'll say yes, but it probably won't come from Amazon.
Well, no.
There is a stipulation in HIPAA that says that hospitals, whereas there's no marketing allowed, however, hospitals are allowed to take money from interested third parties and then use that money to send an advertisement to the people who have come to the hospital. So, for instance, if you've had a baby at Hospital X, Pampers can come to Hospital X and say, I'll pay you X, Y, Z if you will just put this information in the baby material,
okay,
or if you'll send
it.
And so then the hospital sends it. The Pampers never finds out who it was sent to, but that's one of the ways of marketing.
Okay, wow. Okay, so don't sign those HIPAA forms.
Don't sign the HIPAA form, but whether you do or do not sign the HIPAA form, they can share your information without your consent. The only thing that if you don't sign the HIPAA form, you have not allowed them to come later, and when you complain about some information being shared, they will not be able to put that, you know, wave that form underneath your nose and say, well, you signed right here that you read our Notice of Privacy Practices, so you should have known how much we share information,
mm-hmm,
and therefore it's your responsibility for sharing
it's us, your fault, not
sharing
theirs.
With us something that you didn't want shared.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. So you're up against a rock in a hard place. If you sign it, they can. If you don't sign it, they can, but they can point the finger at you for not signing it because it sounds like a total.
No, they will. They'll point the finger at, if you sign it, they'll point the finger at you.
Well, right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
They'll say you read it, and so you knew we were going to share information broadly, and so you shouldn't have told us that piece of information.
So don't sign it, period, because you're going to share it anyway, and then
Because you can stand up for it, because you're not going to help propagate. You're not going to help propagate this myth,
right,
that HIPAA protects privacy, and you're going to also let the clinic know that you know that there's no privacy in there.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of privacy, when a mom has a baby, because our youngest one will be in his 30s, but when a mom has a baby nowadays, what do they do? How do they, there's a DNA testing. How does that happen?
Okay, so newborn screening happens within 48 hours after birth. Sometimes the children are taken from the mother. Their heel is pricked. Blood is dropped from the heel onto the special filter,
mm-hmm,
paper, and then the baby's heel is bandaged and brought back to the mother or brought back to the, you know, the nursery. But then the hospital takes that special filter paper, which has about 5 dots of blood on it, and sends it to the state health department. And then newborn screening is done by the government or by its contractor. And then what states have been doing, some of them, well, states almost always keep the results of this newborn screen. And this is really a genetic test. It's considered the largest population-based genetic testing program in the nation. It's really testing for genetic problems. People don't understand that, but it is. It's a genetic screening. So the state government keeps those results, and then increasingly, states have been keeping the actual blood spots.
Oh.
And then making it available to researchers because it's rich with DNA.
Mm.
And so they have been selling the spots. Some states have bartered to get equipment for the health department and given away the spots. 4 states have given spots to the military to create a military database. And so
and this is all tied. This is all tied to the personal information is there. The baby's least last name is there. Date of birth.
Well, it depends on what you're asking me, because certainly on the card that has all the blood spots, it's all the information on the baby and the mother.
Right.
and then that goes to the health department. And then some health departments get rid of it after a month. We have a retention chart on our website, so every year we look to see how long states are keeping the blood. Some, like Michigan, keep it 100 years or indefinitely.
100 years. Oh, my goodness.
Because it's a research. They're doing research on the blood, on the DNA of children without the consent or knowledge of the parents. And so there's a lawsuit. The fifth lawsuit about this is taking place in Michigan. Ours took place, the first one was in Minnesota where we're located. We pulled that one together. Two have happened in Texas, one in Indiana, and now one in Michigan, which is proceeding. The court, the judge is allowing it to proceed. So they tried to stop it, but the judge said nope.
Wow.
And so they're in the midst of discovery, and he's in the midst of getting all this information from the health department about all the uses of the children's DNA without the parents' consent.
Wow.
So we are working on legislation at the federal level, Congress, to require parent consent before the DNA can be used for federally funded research.
Right.
That would help shut down lots of things because most of the research that's done in this country is federally funded.
So how can we protect ourselves from government overreach and intrusion into our health care?
Well, there are several ways. One, you could choose to sort of duck out of the system and find one of the cash checker charge clinics in our Wedge of Health Freedom. That would be at jointhewedge.com, jointhewedge.com. All the doctors and clinics there are cash checker charge only, and they don't share information with anyone. You can also, of course, just ask for some certain information not to be shared and see if you can get by with it.
Yeah.
You can ask your doctors to have a separate paper chart for you. Some doctors have actually done that for patients, but it's difficult with the mandate for electronic health records.
Mm-hmm.
That's made it very, very difficult. But the doctors who are in the Wedge, and there are other doctors that aren't in the Wedge, but they're doing direct primary care, that's one way to stay outside of the net, as it were.
Okay.
So, and certainly with baby DNA, there are states now that allow parents to demand the blood spots back, and so they get taken out of the health department, and they're no longer there.
Okay. So is that the PKU with the baby when they prick the heel?
Yes.
Okay.
That was the very first newborn screen, but now most states test for at least 35 conditions.
Oh, my
Some,
goodness.
Like California, are all the way up to 80 conditions. It used to be that they were just for newborn conditions, but increasingly they're moving to scan the children for conditions that they might get later in life, which is a very big concern.
Oh, yeah.
And there's even some thought of sequencing children at birth and laying out their entire genetic code at birth.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. So jointhewedge.com give you a list of cash checker charge only doctors. Is that
That's right.
Am I understanding? Okay. And they do not share your info. So pardon?
We also have, if you look at the book that I wrote, which you can find at bigbrotherintheexamroom.com, there's a list in the back of things that doctors can do, patients can do, state legislators can do, and members of Congress can do. So I actually have lists. And anybody can start to implement those things and ask those kinds of questions. We also have the patient toolbox.
Okay.
So if you're at the doctor's office or if you're at the hospital and you're uncomfortable about a form, or you're uncomfortable about a question, you don't know who's taking care of you, we've got a list with all of their acronyms. You know, if they say they're a GPA or a PC or, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can look them up, and we also show at patienttoolbox.org, we show you how to cross out consent forms.
How to cross out?
Consent forms.
Oh, consent forms. Okay. Okay,
that
great.
The parts of consent forms that you don't like.
Right. Okay. So patienttoolbox.org for that one.
Yeah.
What's your overall website?
It is cchfreedom.org.
cchfreedom.org. Wow.
Yep.
I do encourage folks to go to all those websites. CCH, the overall website, cchfreedom.org, are the other websites linked from there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, you can find them all there. And we have our Facebook post as well, at least one link to get you to the different Facebook Live presentations on COVID-19.
Okay.
That's also there.
Okay, great. Fantastic. So cchfreedom.org will get you to the master website. We'll put it like that. And you go to all the other websites with all the great information. Wow. Thank you so much, Twyla, for this. This has been very helpful. I really appreciate it.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for asking.
Hey, take care.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.